Blog Talk Radio.
October 3rd, 2011, and I am your host, Tom Riedel, along with my co-host, Lou Riedel. And before we get into our show today, we usually talk about the show itself, a little bit of a back cover, if you will, to the book that's coming forward. And what I'd like to explain first is our special guest, and we'll be talking to New York Times bestselling author Maggie Shane shortly, but I want to preface that interview by saying the book we'll be showcasing on today's show is Twilight Prophecy, but the last book in the Twilight series is now available at all major book retailers, and the name of that book is Twilight Fulfilled. So put that on your book list and get ready to read that. I hear it's doing very well and moving up the charts fast. Also, today's interview with Maggie Shane was pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any phone calls on this show, but you'll be able to contact Maggie Shane over at maggieshane.com. And also, if you're in a Blog Talk Radio site and you're in the chat room, I put some links up there, as always, so you can click on over to her site and have a look. And I'm sure she's got a contact area. In fact, I know she has a contact area, so send any questions or comments to Maggie over on her site. Getting on with the explanation of the show, if you've tuned in before, you know that our Writer's Lounge also has a written blog over at tomriedel.com/blog, and they got something new for you over there. If you go in there and look at the reviews that I do of the books that we have here on the Writer's Lounge, you'll be able to listen to the Blog Talk Radio player, which will archive all the shows up to this point. Also, Facebook is on the Blog Talk Radio site. You want to go over there and click on the link to join us on Facebook. We'd be much appreciated of that. And we have also got that on the chat room. Also, so once again, we're covering all bases here with the chat room and on the Blog Talk Radio site. You can always get a hold of us over at twl11@yahoo.com, and that's how you would get a hold of us if you want to talk to us about getting on the show. Unfortunately, our shows are all booked up through March, which isn't a bad thing, but for all you authors out there that would like to be on the Writer's Lounge at some point, go ahead and submit an email, and we'll try to get you in at some point after March. And we've even considered the possibility of opening up more shows at the beginning of the year. So instead of running every 2 weeks, we'll run maybe a month every week and see how that goes. The popularity of our show has really taken off, so we're really hoping for some success here in the new year and beyond. Okay, where are we at? Let's see. Last week we had on Sherry Gambino, and I want to just mention this. Sherry Gambino, who was on our show last week, just wrote a prequel to the Killer Clown story that was featured as part of a collection of stories in our last show. It's called Relic, And you'll want to go and check that out. Very, very scary story there, and a very good story, which I gave 5 stars to. And I know you can find it. I believe it's on Kindle now for 99 cents. I think that's what Sherry was saying the other day. So go ahead and have a look at that. And I'm sure you're going to find that story very good, especially when Halloween is right around the corner. And there you go, a little bit of Halloween there for you. And let's see, and our upcoming authors, next time around on October 17th, we have Luke Romain from Australia coming up, and we're going to review his book, Dark Path, which rose in the top 10 of horror novels of 2009. And the new book coming out, not just yet, very soon, though, is called Blacklisted, which we'll be looking forward to that. The next show after that is Halloween, and C.K. Webb and D.J. Weaver will be here with the second novel of the 911 abduction series, and their new novel is due out on October 25th. So hopefully we'll be able to do a review of that book before they appear on the program, and that book's name is Collecting Innocence. So that's pretty much it. And now I'd like to turn it over to a segment that we normally do here called Writer's Topics. And my co-host Lou, my wife, will talk to us about something that she's looking at. And Lou, what do you got for us today?
Good evening. I was looking at some blogs on the internet. I saw one called The Writer's Place, which is written by Nancy Christie, who has been a writer for 50 years since she was 7 years old, and she said that writing was her first love and would remain her last. And she interviewed a few other authors to find out what the circumstances were or how did they know that writing was the one for them. And I'll just mention a few people here. They're not very well-known authors, but you might have heard of some of them. Mary Ann Myers. I fell in love with writing shortly after our son was born. I'm a horse person and had always been at the barn. I found myself at home a lot more when he was young. He was 2 and our daughter was 7 at the time. He's now 30. One day back then, I decided to write the Great American Racehorse novel. I had no idea what I was doing when it came to writing, but I sat down with a manual typewriter. And as the saying goes, the rest is history. I have been writing ever since. Writing for me is all-consuming. It's love, it's infatuation. It's heartbreak, it's life. It's one of the few things that I do or have ever done that takes over completely. When I'm writing, that is all I am doing. I am totally immersed. I am no longer me. I no longer live in my house. I live and breathe where my characters live. Everything else fades away. It's intoxicating. And then we have another one here who is Alyssa Bowman. And she writes, it was in high school. I was your typical awkward and miserable teen who thought she was fat, but really bordered on the edge of having an eating disorder, and who thought she was ugly, but really was quite fetching. I thought everyone hated me. I was convinced that I was a loser. I was quite depressed and somewhat suicidal. Then I took a journalism class. It taught me a formula and a structure for writing, and I became obsessed with writing stories, words, and headlines. When I was writing, I wasn't miserable. I was transported into another universe that I understood, and that understood me. That's when I fell in love. And I always tell people that I don't want to write, I need to write, and that writing takes me to what I call my happy place.
That's right. And also, getting close to the interview with Maggie, I'd like to interject that much of her life, I believe, could be related back to that first part that you talked about where you become absorbed in your writing and it sort of absorbs you. So
it just takes over.
That's right.
Everything.
And with further ado, let's go to the interview with best-selling New York Times author Maggie Shane. We'll be right back after the interview.
The book, Twilight Prophecy, is the second to the newest installment in Maggie Shane's Twilight Vampire series, which she has written since 1993, and she and her publisher have just unveiled the last book in that series, Twilight Fulfilled, which is now available for purchase at all of the major book retailers. In Twilight Prophecy, James is unlike a lot of vampires. He is a quarter human, and he has a power that enables him to cure the sick and dying, compelling him to spend much of his time wandering around hospital wards curing kids with cancer. He believes it's his destiny to help the mortal segment of society until an ancient prophecy suggests a different fate. If you want a full review of the book, head over to my blog at tomridell.com/blog, but don't do it now. Wait, because Lou is going to read an excerpt from Twilight Prophecy, and of course, we have Maggie Shane standing by for a chat after that. Lou will now read an excerpt from Twilight Prophecy.
James dressed in white, white lab coat, white scrubs, white cross trainers. Sometimes he broke it up with a colored shirt, but for these visits, he mostly stuck with white, made him fit in. That was important to him, fitting in. Though deep down, he knew he didn't, not anywhere. He was one of a kind. One of a pair, really, but even his twin was his opposite. Fitting in here, though, or at least projecting the appearance of doing so, was necessary. A matter of life and death, and maybe part of the elusive thing he'd been seeking his entire life, a reason for his existence. He nodded in a friendly, confident way to the people he passed in the antiseptic, cluttered corridors of New York Hospital for Children. It was a busy place, even after visiting hours. As soon as he saw his chance, James ducked into one of the patient rooms, and then he paused and went silent as he turned to look. There, asleep in the bed, lay a little girl who slept with a knit hat pulled down over her head to cover the fact that she had no hair. No eyebrows, though that was harder to hide despite the dimness of the room. There was a sickly sweet scent clinging to her, the scent of cancer. And while most human beings wouldn't have been able to detect it, he could. He wasn't entirely human after all, much as he hated to admit that. Vampiric blood ran in his veins, heightening his senses well beyond the norm. So he smelled the cancer mingling with a stronger sense of antibiotics and the iodine concoction that stained her skin near every puncture wound. The little girl's arms looked as if they'd been used for pincushions. It was barely 9 p.m., but she was asleep, her body exhausted, her spirit worn down. Her name was Melinda. She was 10 years old, and she was terminal. His eyes on the sleeping child, he moved closer to the bed. Watching her, keeping his steps silent, he reached out his open hands and laid them gently on the center of her chest, palms down, thumbs touching. He closed his eyes and opened his heart. "Doctor?" a woman asked. James opened his eyes but didn't move his hands. He hadn't noticed the woman sitting beside the bed, hadn't even checked to be sure the room was empty. This little girl had been his entire focus, and he thought that for as long as he had been sneaking in and out of hospital rooms by night, he really ought to know better. He just got so caught up in his work. "What are you doing?" the woman asked. He smiled and met her eyes, willing the unnatural glow in his own to bank itself, to hide from her. "Just feeling her heartbeat." The woman, the little girl's mother, if physical resemblance was anything to go by, lifted her brows. He saw her clearly despite the darkness of the room. "Isn't that what your stethoscope is for?" "Do you mind if I finish?" He inserted authority into his tone this time. That was what a real doctor would do after all. "You're welcome to stay, but I do need silence." Frowning, Melinda's mother rose from her chair to watch him. He kept his hands on the girl and felt them growing warmer, knew that soon he would give himself away. He had to distract her. "Would you mind getting me her chart? It's over on her nightstand, I believe." Nodding, although obviously still suspicious of him, she moved up to the nightstand. And James, with the power he'd felt rising up in him, continued to move through him, into his hands and into the child. A soft golden yellow glow emanated from his palms for a long moment, and he let it, not stepping even when he knew the mother was turning back toward him, even when he knew from her sharp gasp that she'd seen. The power would flow for as long as it needed to. Sometimes it took a second, sometimes a minute, but only it knew when it was finished.
Okay, thank you, Lou. I know all of you, having heard that, will want to buy the book right away, and Twilight Fulfilled will conclude that awesome story, so why not buy both stories, or better yet, stand by and we'll talk to Maggie to see where you can buy the whole Twilight series. In this time slot, I usually promote the author and tell you a little bit about them, but I'm going to give you a break from that this evening and let Maggie Shane give you a brief history of what she has written over the years. And we're going to do that by letting you listen to a song Maggie recorded a while ago where she sings about herself and her past. Yes, not only can Maggie Shane write, she can also sing. Right after the special music segment, we'll be back to talk to Maggie. Here's Maggie in I Was Vampire When Vampire Wasn't Cool. I'd like to introduce a lady who is a Rita Award winner, an advice columnist, a former soap opera writer, among other things, and a New York Times best-selling author of more than 50 books, Maggie Shane. Now, how are you, Maggie? Let's bring you on right about now. Maggie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome to
okay,
the show.
Okay, great. Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, did you hear that audio?
Yeah, I did, and it sounded fine from this end.
Okay, well, then I guess we're going to have to go back and let it play out, because that's a great song you sung there, Maggie.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed doing it. I always said if I didn't make this writing thing work out, I would prefer to become a famous singer.
Very good. I think you do a very good job. And it's ironic, a little bit of history here, that in 1993 I met you in a bookstore in Westcott Street in Syracuse where you signed a book, your first book, which was Reckless Angel, which I have right in front of me. And now you're on the Writer's Lounge promoting your last book after 18 years of that series. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. Reckless Angel was indeed my first book. However, it wasn't the first book of this particular series. That was a romantic suspense novel. If you you remember, the second book came out was actually my first vampire novel, and that also came out in 93, 1 month after Reckless Angel. It was Twilight Fantasies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That was very exciting. Must have been very exciting for you back in that during that time when I met you. Of course, you probably don't remember me, but
I do indeed. I remember you very well, Tom, and I remember that book signing. It kind of ruined me for all future events because I sold 64 copies of my very first novel at my very first book signing, and I really expected them all to be like that from then on. They really aren't.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's a good way to start.
Yeah, I want to let you know that if we do have a technical problem here and you appear to go off the air, or we appear to go off the air, don't hang up, stay on, because it usually regenerates itself and comes back on. So just keep that in mind as we go along here. But,
okay, thanks for the warning.
Yep. Well, anyway, you finally made it to the end of a very long story. You've written the Twilight Vampire series since 1993, which we were just talking about. How did it feel when you wrote that last sentence in Twilight Fulfilled?
Well, I did two things. The first thing I did was sigh and begin to cry, a lot of tears at that moment. And the second thing I did about 10 minutes later was start thinking about how I could maybe in a few years do like a reunion tour book and maybe do just one more story with these characters.
Yeah.
They are so much a part of my life. They've been with me in my writing career since the very beginning, and it's been 18 years now. And I'm not really sure how long I'll be able to stay away from them. I want to move on and do new things. I do feel like we're losing a readership that feels hesitant to start a series on book 17 or 18. And, so I think starting new could be very good for me career-wise, but I don't know. I really honestly don't know for sure if I'll be able to stay away from these characters for very long.
Yeah, I imagine you probably will get back into it. I'd like to introduce my wife here. She's here smiling, probably relating to a lot of what you just talked about. But my wife, Lou, is here, and she'd like to ask you a couple of questions or introduce herself.
Okay. All right. Hi, Lou.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. I feel like I know you from our interactions on Facebook and so on.
I know. I was going to say about your series, it's almost like losing family, isn't it?
It really is. They're so real to me. I don't even feel like I'm losing them. I just feel like they're still there. They're still out there. They're real on some level in some plane. I think all fictional characters exist, in the land of imagination. I don't know. They exist in their own little world. So I don't feel like I'm losing them. They're definitely still with me, which is why, I don't know if I can stay away because they're very bossy.
they do tend to become part of your life. I do know that.
They do. Mm-hmm.
Which kind of brings me to a question regarding the creating of characters. Do they have a tendency, do you think, to control you more, or do you control them?
Well, I always start out thinking I'm going to control them. Rhiannon is, I think, the matriarch of this series, the vampiress Rhiannon, who was introduced in book two. However, she was in my mind from the very beginning, kind of telling me the stories. And when I first proposed her book two, she was actually the villain. I had paired the hero up with this rather milquetoast heroine who was kind of a kitten. And Rhiannon was going to be the big bad vixen that was coming in being the villainess. However, when my editors, it was Melissa Sennett at the time at Silhouette Books and her boss, Leslie Wanger, who's my current editor, they both had the same reaction, and that was that Rhiannon needs to be the heroine, not the villain. She's a far stronger character. She comes alive right off the page, and they saw it before I did. But I was a rookie, and
yeah.
She's running the show ever since. So Rhiannon's definitely the strongest character in this series to me.
Very good. We all know that you've been writing professionally for many years. What would you be doing, do you think, if you weren't a writer? What would you do? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, when I was a little one, aside from always singing, I was always singing. But when company came to my house and I was 4 years old, my mother would have me come out and sing for them. I was that much of a ham. I would love a career as a vocalist. But as a child, I wanted to be an archaeologist when I grew up. And I think a lot of that comes through in these books because I delve into the history in ancient Sumer, and there's artifacts and scrolls and the cuneiform script on the tablets of clay, and a lot of that stuff comes through in a lot of different aspects of my work, not just the vampire series. I've used it in other books as well. So I get to kind of play around being an archaeologist in my fiction. The other thing I've discovered that I just love doing is making videos, and that's a recent discovery of mine. I have this wonderful program that comes standard with my Mac, iMovie, and I have I've been playing with that a lot, and I just love making movies. I have my little camcorder. I take videos of my dogs. I make book trailer videos. I think I could be a little Spielberg given the opportunity. So those are a couple options.
Yes, I've seen a couple of those videos, Maggie, and did a fabulous job. I, too, do a little bit of that, too. In my field here in Maplewood, Minnesota, I also work as a producer at SEC TV, so I know exactly what you're doing with those videos, and I think it's a great thing. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. Sometimes it's a little too much fun because I'll be sitting here with a deadline, and instead of writing, I'm making a new video. So it's addictive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us more about that wonderful family of yours that shares your home. And I believe it's Serenity is what you call it?
Serenity is indeed the name of my home. And I live here with my partner, Lance. And we have two English Mastiffs, Dozer and Daisy. They weigh about 195 pounds each. Great big dogs. We have a little English Bulldog, Niblet. I'll never be without an English Bulldog. He had one. My partner had one before, and I had two before. We've both been English Bulldog lovers. I think you have to own one to get it, but once you've had an English Bulldog, there's nothing else. They're just personality plus. And we have a bit of a menagerie. We have a bearded dragon, Captain Yellowbeard, and we have a saltwater aquarium, and we have a very bossy cat. And those are the beings that share our home. I also have five daughters who live on their own apart from me and a passel of grandchildren, and they are very much a part of our lives as well. So it's a busy and love-filled existence here at Serenity.
Yeah, you have quite a menagerie. I've seen some of your videos showing, you know, your, what was it, the aquarium, the terrarium?
The aquarium, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
That looks like a lot of fun.
It is. It's a fun hobby. It's quite a demanding hobby as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would do that again, but now that I have it, I can't let it go. I do love my little fish. They all have names. Larry and Sil are the classics. and I've got Vinny, who is a striped damselfish. He's named Vinny because Lance said he's a punk. No offense to any Vinnies out there. we kind of named him after my cousin Vinny, the film with Joe Pesci.
Oh, that's right.
Because he's got such attitude, he picks on all the other fish. And then we've got Little Blue, who is a blue damsel, and. Yeah, we get real close with our critters. They're so human to us, even the fish. So we converse and have conversations with them. And the lizard especially, he listens. He looks at you, and his face is very expressive. And when you're talking to him, his little eyebrow will go up, and he gives you this look. So, yeah, we do love our pets.
How wonderful. Well, we know that one of your beloved dogs, Dozer, actually starred in one of your books.
Yes, he did. Dozer was in, Kill Me Again, which was a romantic suspense that came out last summer from Mira Books. And he was almost as important a character as the hero and heroine in that book, maybe even as important. He really was the third main character. And his name was Freddy in the book, but it was all Dozer. It was completely Dozer, except Freddy obeyed a little better. It was so based on my Dozer. And that was the one book that was nominated for the Rita that year.
Oh.
And I really do, I credit Dozer with that.
Do you have any other major roles coming up for him?
I don't have anything planned. I've been kind of mulling over putting another bulldog in a book in the back of my mind. My previous bulldog, Wrinkles, starred in one of my early intimate moments category romances for Silhouette. They even put her on the cover. And so she was in one of those books, and I've been thinking I really need to do another bulldog book. I like animals in books, and I like animals drawn by people who clearly, you know them. And
yes.
Bulldogs are a fascinating breed, and I really would like to put her in a book. And then, you know, I have to give equal time to the other guys. So I'm going to have to, you know, give everybody a book eventually.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can always tell an animal lover who writes about animals. One of my favorite other authors is Dean Koontz.
Mm-hmm.
And he always puts his own dogs into his books in, you know, mm-hmm. one way or another. And, you know, you can feel that love coming through.
You can, and the people who don't, you know, don't own animals or have animals or at least, you know, aren't animal lovers, they'll stick the animal in the book and then kind of forget it's there. Like mm-hmm. the soap operas do with babies. You know, they're there, but you never see them on the screen. It's kind of in the mm-hmm. background. They forget their existence. I like them right on the page.
Yeah.
And involved in the plot, you know. I like them to have something to do besides just be window dressing.
Yeah, that's something I just learned about you, Maggie, is that you did write for soap operas. Which soap opera did you write for?
I wrote for The Guiding Light, and it was not my fault it was canceled. Just have
okay.
to throw that in. It was a long time ago, probably 6-7 years ago now, maybe even more than that. I really should have taken notes. I worked for Guiding Light for over a year, writing the story arcs, which is like a big synopsis of what's going to happen in a 3-month period on the soap. And I wrote story arcs for them for a year, and they actually used several of them, although when they asked me how I was enjoying watching them, I was stunned because I didn't recognize anything that I had written and I had been watching, which is why I gave up doing that. It's writing by committee, and by the time your story makes it around the committee table of executives who are not writers, it ends up each one takes something out and puts something in. And by the time it goes around the whole table and gets to the end, it's no longer what you wrote in any way. At least that was the case for me. My name would have been, you know, in the credits, but the story wasn't bearing any resemblance to what I had written. And so when I was offered at the end of that year, I was offered the job of a co-head writer, myself and another woman I'd been working with, and we agreed to turn it down. It was just not my cup of tea. I didn't like being in the city. I love visiting Manhattan, but they wanted me there 4 or 5 days a week, and I couldn't do that. I was the bookkeeper for the varsity girls basketball team that year. I was needed at home. So I turned down a very big number with a dollar sign at the beginning to return to doing what I love, writing novels. And I think I've never had any doubt that that was the right decision. I think it was the right move. I'm still not sure what that little side journey was about, though. I've always felt like it, you know, it had some purpose and that it would make itself clear to me what that purpose was eventually. And I still haven't reached that point where I get it, but I know it happened for a reason. Because it was a whole year and a lot of work.
And they say everything in life happens for a reason.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'll encounter someone I worked with, you know, again in the future, or, you know, I don't even know what doors it might open, but I'm sure there was a reason, and it was a fun experience, an eye-opening experience, and I learned an awful lot. I learned a whole new, you know, type of writing, and then, you know, and I kind of have to take it for what it was and, you know, just be grateful for the experience and move on.
Right. Give us an example, Maggie, of what your day is like as a writer from morning to night. I know sometimes I kind of sit back when I'm reading your books and I think about you in serenity there, sitting back or up in your den or your office there where you write. And I'd like to know and let the listeners know what it's like for you from morning to night as a writer.
Well, I used to be a very nose-to-the-grindstone, get-your-pages-done, you know, daily quota, do it no matter what kind of writer, and those were the workshops I gave to aspiring people. You know, you get your pages done first before anything else. But I have aged, and I have mellowed. And my life now is pretty much doing exactly what I feel like doing exactly when I feel like doing it. And so if I am inspired to write first thing in the morning, that's what I'll do. If I would rather go for a walk outdoors with the dogs and sip my coffee leisurely for a little bit longer or watch Morning Joe on MSNBC, I do that instead. I do write almost every single day. At some point in the day, I will feel, you know, moved to get up here and do something. But I don't do a quota anymore. I write while it's flowing. I stop when it's no longer flowing. And I think I'm getting more work done in less time and that it's better work more quality stuff with less revisions necessary when I kind of just listen to my own inner voice. Life at Serenity is it's just the most blissful existence I ever could have dreamed for myself, and I'm so happy that I'm living it. We spend our time. We have our breakfast leisurely in the morning. We take care of the animals' needs. We each do our own thing. My partner does a lot of automotive work and airbrushing work and things like that out in the garage. And he too makes his own hours. So if we, anytime we feel like just let's quit for the day and go swimming, or let's go for a bike ride, or let's go for a kayak ride, whatever it is, if the mood strikes us, we drop everything and just do it and have fun. I'm so convinced that that is the best way to live, to just, if you're lucky enough to be able to do that and go where the wind blows you and do what the mood strikes you to do, you're very lucky. I'm a very, very lucky person, and ever conscious and aware of that and grateful for it.
That does sound really, really blissful. I think it's something that all of us dream about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maggie, as far as social media, it's become such a huge part of people's lives these days, with Facebook and Twitter and just having a website out there and that kind of thing. How has it affected you as a person and as a writer? Obviously when you started writing back all those years ago, we didn't have the kind of social networking that we have now, the kind of social media that we have now. How has that affected you?
Very, very positively. I know that a lot of people are intimidated by it and a little bit overwhelmed by it. But for me, it's been just wonderful. For one thing, I was able to help my daughter Jessica, my middle daughter, launch her business as an author's assistant, which is a business that she does entirely online. She wouldn't have been able to do this when I started writing. It wouldn't have been possible, but she formats ebooks for people, and she, helps them manage their social media for people who are overwhelmed with it, and she does a whole lot of other stuff, too. She does everything for me, and I couldn't live without her. And just a plug, she's at authorslifesaver.com. But at any rate, for me, the tweeting is fun. The Facebook is fun. I don't do as much MySpace. I have two blogs. I have a group blog called StoryBroads.com with some other authors where I blog every Thursday. I'm there with Patricia Potter, Suzanne Forster, Ann Stewart, Tara Taylor Quinn. I know I'm leaving somebody out, Lynn Kirsten, and myself. I think I got everyone. And we take turns blogging, so my blogs are on Thursdays there. We have a lot of fun. I have a solo blog called shamesshenanigans.com, which you probably can't spell, and I need to think about changing that name, but there's a link on my website.
I love the name, Maggie. Don't change it. Love the name.
I hope people just, once they find it the first time, just bookmark it, and you don't ever have to type it in again. I haven't updated that lately. I need to do that today. So I update that, when I feel like it. And then I have my website, MaggieShane.com, which is very interactive. I have a pile of Yahoo groups lists, although those are kind of, that used to be where things were happening. And now the email groups seem to be, kind of going the way of the dinosaurs, where people are replacing those with things like Facebook and Twitter, which is more immediate. I think it's more, real time almost. But I'm loving it. It enables me to reach out to my fans. It enables me to let, a few thousand people know I have a new book trailer, a new video book trailer out with one email, with one, mm-hmm. post. I just love it. I just love it. I use it to, not only just for PR, but I like to share positive, inspirational blogs and quotes and insights and ideas with people, and I think they enjoy that too. When I'm following anyone and all they ever post is PR, I kind of quickly unfollow them because it gets, mm-hmm. it's like watching a commercial all day, and I don't like commercials. I fast forward through them. So
you want to get to know the person,
exactly.
Promoting.
Right, exactly. If you use it as a way to touch your fans and your readers, to interact with them, to find out what's going on with them and tell them what's going on with you, it's so much more even effective PR-wise, although
I agree.
I almost think if that's why you're doing it, it's not going to work. You have to do it because it's from the heart. And I think people sense that, you know, if you really care and you really, I just enjoy the heck out of it. I really do. I have to rein myself in from, you know, spending too much time, you know, doing that rather than writing it. So a lot of times I Facebook and tweet in the morning before I settle in for my writing. You know, I do that first because that's fun. Yeah. I like to do the fun stuff first. I like to eat dessert first. I just, that's my philosophy of life.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with eating your dessert before your main course. But just to get back to the Facebook groups quickly, you know, that is actually a wonderful immediate way, as you say, of getting your book trailers out.
Because
it's just posted on the wall, and it goes out to whomever looks at that page instantaneously.
Facebook and people
are a pretty great way of getting your, you know, getting yourself out there.
It's nice because people can repost and share with their readers, and then those readers can repost and share, and it can become viral quite easily.
Maggie, getting back to what you were alluding to earlier, being a very happy person, I'm always amazed at how happy you seem to be when I read about your post and your life. And sure, you have the struggles going on lately. You've had some issues. But what's your secret? What keeps you grounded to this life and to this world? How do you deal with the stress of everyday life?
Well, I think that, you know, as you live, and life experience has a lot to do with me getting to the point where I've now reached. I'm very serene and very content. I had a fire in 2007.
Yes.
Gutted my house. I lost two dogs. It was devastating. From the other side of that, when I look back, everything in my life has improved immensely, not only since the fire, but in a lot of ways because of the fire. And it kind of hit me like a metaphor for everything in life. When you're going through the hard times, you can't see the silver lining or the good that's going to result from them. But there always is. If you look back on what you thought was the worst crisis of your life 5 years later, you know, from a new perspective, you can see that it had to happen in order for you to move forward. So every, you know, crisis or trial in life I experience, I try to just, you know, say, okay, well, it is what it is, and I can be miserable about it, and it'll still be what it is, or I can be happy in spite of it, and it'll still be what it is. Happiness is a choice. It's you can't be happy based on the conditions around you. You have to be happy. And I think when you choose happiness, the conditions around you improve because they have to rise to match your vibration. So the hard times are less hard, they're shorter, and the good things that come afterwards are even better and brighter and quicker to arrive. So that's pretty much my life philosophy, is that happiness is a choice and everything happens for a reason, and you've just got to kind of, you know, go with the flow and open your eyes and try to see that silver lining. It's always there.
Yeah, and when I first met you, I was coming out of very severe depression for 3 years that I dealt with that, and just started looking into getting my writing going, and that's when I met you. And I can appreciate the fire in my situation. I had to go through the fire myself to find myself on this side where I'm very happy these days. Sure, we all have struggles still, but we're able to cope with those struggles a little bit more than we used to, or at least I'm able to do that. And I really appreciate, you know, your involvement with people's lives in promoting that happiness and trying to get somebody to get to that point where you're happier than you were and moving on with your life, which it seems that you have done, and I admire you a lot for that. You know.
Oh, well, thank you. I actually get mail as if I, you know, am a life coach. I get mail from when my readers hit really rough points in their life. Oftentimes, they'll write to me for advice, and it's really gratifying that they do that. I obviously, I don't take on anything that I feel is beyond my scope. If they need to be referred to, you know, a therapist or something like that, I do that. But a lot of times I can help them get a better perspective on what's going on. And that's just another result of being, you know, being open and being in touch through social media largely with people and really caring about them, they respond to that in such a personal and meaningful way. And, you know, in the end, it's not about how many books you sell. It's about how many lives you touch, and whether that's through, you know, in touch in a positive way, and whether that's through your books or through just that contact. That's totally aside and meaningless. It's that you touch those lives in a positive way. That's what counts.
Yeah, in 2008, I believe, I was out at a store here in Maplewood, Minnesota, and I hadn't been in contact with you. Well, I hadn't seen or heard from you since 93, and I saw Angel's Pain on the bookshelf, and when I saw your name, I got all excited. Of course, my wife knows I got a little bit of a crush on you. But,
so you anyway, can smack him, Lou.
Yeah, I picked up the book, and I read it, and I thought, as we all wonder these days and go to, but I went right directly to Facebook, and I said, I wonder if Maggie Shane's on Facebook. So I took my old copy that I had buried in my bookcase, The Reckless Angel, and I reached into it and pulled out the news clipping that I had tucked in that book. And when I found you on Facebook, I thought, wow, this is really amazing. So I read that article, a little clipping again, and it kind of took me back to 1993. So it was very exciting for me to reconnect with you. Getting back.
Me too. And you posted that. I remember you scanned that clip and posted it.
Yes,
and I think
did.
I had my, you know, 1993 hair at the time.
Yeah. We're looking at it right now, and you're holding two books in your hand.
Well, what a blast from the past.
Yeah, you got two books in your hand, and now you got over 50, so it'd be kind of hard to hold all those books now.
I couldn't hold them all.
Yeah.
It's been a long and winding road, hasn't it?
Yeah, it sure has. As you know,
amazing.
We promote new authors on the Writer's Lounge, and many of them are just getting started with their writing. Can you tell us about what it was like when you wrote that first book, from writing it to finally getting it published?
Well, it was actually, it was my fourth book, I believe, that I had written. The first
right.
three never saw the light of day. And I had been probably 8 years writing and submitting at that point when I finally sold. And so I was starting to get a little bit downtrodden. I hadn't yet developed my current philosophy. I just knew that writing felt right to me, and it felt like what I was supposed to be doing, and I couldn't understand why it wasn't working out because it felt so right. But my youngest of my five daughters was about to start kindergarten, and I had made a deal with my now ex-husband that I was going to get a, quote, real job once that day came and all the kids were in school. So I was kind of at the end of my rope with, you know, submitting this one last thing, and I had sent it out in August, and the school started in September. I'd never had a response in less than 6 months, so I was, you know, looking at the want ads and working on a resume and trying to figure out what I was going to do for, you know, a real job. I got the call 2 weeks before school started, and had sold that first book, and it was, you know, I cannot even retell that moment without crying again today, even though it was 18 years ago.
Mm.
It still chokes me up. I get tears in my eyes when that call came, and all my little girls, like little ducks, each one a little smaller than the one before, lined up in the room watching, and they knew what it meant, they knew what it was, they'd been with me through the, you know, I'd been submitting, I think Gina was 12, and little Lisa was almost five. She must have been five at that point. And, just barely five. That's right, because her birthday's in August. And, you know, and they all knew. And when I put the phone down and told them, we screamed and jumped up and down and laughed, and we all cried. And it was just a wonderful moment. I'm so glad my five girls were there to share that moment with me. That was one of the most special moments of my life, yeah.
Do you ever go back and read any of your stories?
I do. You know, I don't have as much time to as I would like, and it's kind of hard to read the real early ones. I tried to start pulling them out and reading them again when they started coming out in ebook format, because I knew new readers would be reading them for the first time. And, you know, it's funny how much has changed. I mean, I would really love to go back and kind of update them all. Nobody has cell phones, you know. The computers are all huge. You know, email is, it's all DOS-based, and it's really, everything is very different, you know. I don't remember if there were CDs. There certainly were not MP3s or iPods. Probably VCRs and not DVD players, and certainly no Netflix. I mean, so much of social culture in our day-to-day life, just little things that we don't even notice, are so different now than they were 18 years ago that, I really would love to have the time to go back and update all of them. But that's not going to happen.
Actually, it says here, I'm reading from the article, for 5 years she pecked at a typewriter in her dining room with her husband, a tractor-trailer driver, and her five daughters read over her while her five daughters read over her shoulder. Her first four books were rejected. Last year, her fortune changed. She sold five books. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's what you were doing back then. You were pecking on the typewriter.
But none of those books were the ones I had already written. So the first three were my learning books. And they never did sell. I've still got at least one of them kicking around here, typed in that big stacked up manuscript. I didn't have a computer at the beginning. I had a manual typewriter at first, and when I wanted to make changes, I would retype a line and cut it out and scotch tape it over the original line, and then photocopy that sheet so that I didn't have to retype the whole page. Times sure have changed.
Oh. I remember doing that.
Mm-hmm. I remember after the first sale, they asked me for the disc, the little floppy disc of the manuscript, and because writers were using computers. I just didn't happen to be one of them. I said, what disc? I have no disc. This was typed. So the first thing I did with my advanced tech was buy a computer.
Oh, that was probably one of the best purchases you ever made, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. I was very nervous about it. I was afraid it would slow down my writing, you know, learning a new way to create. But I absolutely loved it. And I'm a Mac now. I'm big time on the Mac. So I wouldn't write with anything else.
That's fabulous. So what does Maggie Shane have for us in 2012?
In 2012, I will be launching a brand new series with Mira Books called The Portal. It's a witchcraft series. It's contemporary, very dark, very sexy, and it will be a trilogy. Book one in October of 2012 is called Mark of the Witch. Book two will be out in December of 2012, and that is Daughter of the Sorceress, I believe. And then the third one, yet to be titled, will be out in February 2012.
Wow.
Maybe it is titled Blood of the Spellcaster, I think is what it is. Gosh, I can't even... You know, after 50 books, your brain just starts to... I'm trying to remember your kids' birthdays. You know, the first two I remember, the next three I have to think about.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I'm looking forward to reading them very much.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm just finishing up the first one now, and it's going. I'm really liking it. It's going very well.
Very good. Anything else that you'd like to share with us and our listeners? And I know you've already mentioned your website, but if you want to do that again?
Sure. I'm at MaggieShane.com, www, of course, MaggieShane.com. Don't forget the Y in Shane. And that's my website. I'm also very active on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/ Maggie Shane, author.
Very good. And Maggie, we've come to the end of our interview, and we are letting it run a little bit longer than normal. And once again, this is a pre-recorded interview, and the show will actually air on October 3rd. I have to go in and do some editing of this interview, but we really appreciate you being here with us today, and thank you so much, and best wishes to you. And I get kind of choked up because my wife knows how much I like you. But it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Tom. And thank you, Lou. And thank you for putting up with him. This has been wonderful. I do want to quickly plug my upcoming release, which is Twilight Fulfilled, the final book of that vampire series. It goes on sale September 20th in print and October 1st in all electronic formats.
Okay, great. And
okay, thank you. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Maggie Shane. It was a blast interviewing her, and she's one super author and one super lady. So go ahead and get out there and purchase Twilight Fulfilled. Once again, I hear it's zooming up the charts. So let's keep our fingers crossed, and let's get Maggie Shane on the bestsellers list once again on the New York Times bestselling list, as well as other lists out there, too. Anyway, at this point in time in our show, I usually use this time slot for a little bit of a preview of our next guest coming up here on October 17th. And boy, do we have an interesting fella for you then. His name is Luke Romain. He's a writer and author from Australia. And he'll be on the Writer's Lounge next October on October 17th. And we're waiting patiently for his second book to be released, which is titled Blacklisted. Blacklisted, and it will be released very soon. His first book, The Dark Path, zipped up the charts and became a hugely successful bestseller and was voted to be in the top 10 of horror novels of 2009. Luke has many stories to tell in real life, I'm sure, as he has worked in the security industry for over 17 years. He worked as a doorman in some of Australia's roughest pubs, and he even protected Mickey Mouse during the course of his security career. So it'll be fun to hear about those stories. Luke can also be found on Twitter with some of his friends, and they often eat up his funny and witty comments, and we're hoping a few of his online friends will call into the show on October 17th. That would be a lot of fun. Luke has a very fertile imagination, so we look forward to hearing from him on October 17th on the Writer's Lounge. Once again, if you want to set your calendars, Luke will be on the air at 7 p.m. Central Time, 2 weeks from today. So, I guess for him, it'll be, I think, 8 a.m. in the morning in Australia, so I hope he'll have his wit and humor firing on all four cylinders at that early time of the day, but if not, we'll try to fire him up for the show. That would be it for our show today. I'm glad you tuned in for the wonderful interview that we had with Maggie Shane. And once again, get out there and purchase some more of that series that she's just finished up. It's going to take you a long time to get through them, but I'm really sure you're going to love doing that. So go ahead and promote her books and her writing and look for Portal, the series coming up in 2012 from Maggie Shane. So that's it for us from the Writer's Lounge. We'll see you next time. Good reading and good writing.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. God spoke to Noah One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will